Famous writers were there: Shakespeare, Dickens, Longfellow, Tennyson, Emerson, Thackeray, Holmes, Harriet Beecher Stowe, Kate Field, and others too numerous to mention. The great scientists, Zollner, Faraday, and Thales, were the, and master musicians, Wagner, Beethoven, Mozart, Mendelssohn, Schubert, Liszt, Chopin, and Handel, also magnificent singers, Jenny Lind, Emma Abbott, Pepe Rosa, and Carrillo. Each of these great people gave freely of their powers. They knew what the people wanted, and, as their time was not limited, they sang, played, recited, and talked again and again. While the entertainment was going on in one part of the great building, in other parts the guests were passing the time in a social way. No small talk or gossip was indulged in, there was no place for it and no desire for it among these gifted people and their friends. What would the people of Earth think, I wonder, to know that they could stand face to face with the gentle Longfellow and hear him recite his latest poem, or listen to Emma Abbott sing some of the old-time favorites as well as the new operatic selections of heaven? I had the pleasure of listening to Wagner upon this occasion. He talked of his latest achievement in grand opera, and wanted all those present to attend the first performance in his grand opera hall. His latest work was founded upon a recent order of the higher kingdom and was known as Glenardo, the Knight of the Golden Key. Camillo and Florentina, our host and hostess, were to sing the leading parts. With what an absorbing interest the hours went by. After the gifted people had entertained their vast audience, the host and hostess invited their guests to pass through the many beautiful rooms and the buildings connected with their villa, which were dedicated to a number of the higher arts and sciences. There was a magnificent gallery of art, containing wonderful treasures in the way of sculpture and pictures. There was a fine laboratory, where we were invited to witness some electrical tests by Thales and Faraday. Upon this occasion I met many distinguished people, who invited me to their beautiful homes. Before the time came for the guests to depart, their gifted Carmelo presented each one with a beautiful little gift as a souvenir of the occasion. These gifts were miniature reproductions of white villa, set with splendid jewels. Chapter 8. In the spiritual and celestial worlds. It is pleasant to recall the experiences that have come to me during my 2 years in the land of their angels. There has been no confusion so far in my life in heaven, no disappointed hopes or ambitions. I have had plans for those of Earth who were dear to me that have not materialized as I would like to have had them. I know this, however, that all that has been planned for those dear to me by the higher powers must be brought out to the complete satisfaction of all parties concerned, and so, as the days go by, I am hopeful and happy, for I know that the near future contains much concerning plans that are of interest to me. I had been but a short time in spirit life when an organization of influential people of the other life was perfected arid called the Temple Society. Many of the most gifted and powerful beings from the different spheres of immortal life were at the head of this organization. I learned that the society extended far up into kingdoms beyond the celestial sphere, and, while visiting God's kingdom and the kingdom of the blessed, I had the pleasure of attending the conventions of this society. Each time that I was called to these higher realms of being, I was made the honored guest of the Temple Society. The object of the organization was the building of the Temple of Light on the Earth. Every branch of the society appointed angelic and spiritual beings to organize temple societies on their Earth in different communities. The work carried on would be entirely spiritual in its nature until its influence had grown to the extent that material minds were conscious of some great plan at work concerning the building of a mighty temple. It was not so much the question of the worlds knowing the plan. The acceptance of the plan by the people of certain communities was the desired point to be gained. And so the development of their idea was noted with interest by the leaders of their organization. the Spiritual Temple Societies sent to work in different parts of the world made their annual reports to the organization in the higher world. Progress in a material sense was not rapid, but those appointed to carry out such a work understood the law, and they knew that they would, no doubt, be obliged to exercise much patience and persistence before the minds of the people could be made receptive to the building of a temple of light on the earth. The progress of the work of temple representatives on the earth was carefully noted by the organizers above, and it was shown just what parts of their country would be favorable to the idea of erecting a temple of light. It was shown that, with their proper material leaders, certain towns and cities of the United States would accept the idea and plan the work of erecting such a structure when the idea was made known in a material sense. Other communities, it was shown, would be very slow in taking up the idea and would never lend their aid in the carrying out of such an enterprise until the others had taken the initiative and had proved it to be a practicable idea. Page 60. The idea was that, in the beginnings there should be one organizer or leader upon the earth, then, as the work grew and unfolded, there would be material representatives to carry on the work in the United States and in foreign countries. The plan was perfected in every detail in a spiritual sense. It was expected, however, that it would require time to perfect it in a material sense. But never once did those chosen to represent the Spiritual Temple Society abandon the idea of the ultimate success of their work upon the earth plane. Since I was connected with the leader of this great plan, I was given the appointment of spiritual recorder of the work carried on by the spiritual and angelic representatives. This was but one of the many duties of my life. I found the work pleasant and interesting and not at all conflicting with the other lines of duty that, by special appointment, were made. It seemed that every duty and pleasure of my life had its own particular place and was carried out by a more perfect system than I had ever known in material life. I felt so well, so strong and happy that it was a pleasure to live and partake of the wonderful privileges that the Creator had given to me. I had evidently been created for a busy life, for I wanted to be busy in the midst of pleasure, and found my greatest happiness in helping others to be happy, and in planning out something that would be helpful to the companion by whose side I had journeyed for many years. I liked to feel that for his sake I had gone on to the higher life, that I might be able to help him in his great work, so that many, seeking for higher truth, might be led to the light. Chapter 9. In the spiritual and celestial worlds, great minds of the higher life have paid tribute to the sublime character whom the world knows as the Christ. They have found no subject more beautiful and inspiring for their characters in music, art, song, or story. One may spend weeks in exploring the galleries of art in the heavenly world and he finds the subject of the Christ, the favorite of painters and sculptors. Michelangelo has delighted to picture him in over 1,000 attitudes. Every great artist, in fact, has created his most sublime works with the Christ as the leading character. A female artist, bearing the name of Celeste Vincenta, has produced some of the most marvelous conceptions in sculpture and painting of Christ, known in heaven as the Divine Jose/. There are galleries of art containing the conceptions of this gifted artist, and every picture or statue occupying the place as central figure of a group is that of the sublime Son of God. We see this beloved one in the grand review of angels, conferring blessings upon the people, clothed in his robes of purple, gold, and white. Again we see him giving into the arms of a mother the child she thought she had destroyed, never believing that it would live to confront her on the other side of life. We see this gentle one ascending through the ether to the higher kingdoms, bathed in a wonderful glowing light. We see him blessing the little children and standing before those who would be HMD in material life. No words can depict the wonder that beams upon their faces as they look upon the Divine One in all the glory of his mighty power. Again we see him depicted, counseling with one who has passed into the spirit world doubting the existence of spiritual life after death. We see him raising his hands toward their multitude, while vibrations of divine power emanate from him and find expression in the forms of those present. One sublime conception by Da Vinci is entitled, When the Comforter Comes. It shows the beloved one moving through the dark sphere, and, wherever he moves, the darkness and the shadows flee away, and in their place shines a wondrous light. The expressions upon the countenances of those who behold film can hardly be described. There is something wonderful about it. Chapter 10, In the Spiritual and Celestial Worlds. In the sacred verse of the spiritual and heavenly worlds, the character of the divine Jose stands out in bold relief. The poet Tennyson has taken the life of the inspired one from mortality to immortality and formed from it a sacred and sublime work. It is considered a masterpiece by higher critics. The great music master Wagner has given to heaven a grand conception also portraying their character of the divine. It is entitled A Master of Power. During my 2 years of life in the heavenly world, it had been my pleasure and privilege to look upon the masterpieces of sacred art of which I have made mention. I have also listened to and witnessed the musical and dramatic compositions that have, for their theme, the immortal Jose. More inspiring to me, however, have been my personal experiences with this glorious character. I have gained from him knowledge of higher spiritual laws that have been helpful to me in my progress to higher consciousness. This divine teacher has opened up the way for me to attainments that I have longed for during many years of my life. I may say that I have sat at the feet of the master and gathered the jewels of thought and wisdom that have flowed from his divinely inspired soul. That he is the true son of the reigning God of the earth, the spiritual, celestial, and higher worlds, I know to be a fact. That he is a reigning God himself is another great truth of which I have knowledge. My experience has taught me many things that no longer require faith to substantiate them. I know that there are many believers in spiritual truth dwelling in physical bodies who would do away with the belief of the existence of the one there earth calls the Christ. From my point of view, to do this would be to take away the foundation upon which religion rests. Many inspired teachers, whose work and mission have been to help humanity to attain a higher standard, have been given to the world. They have passed on to higher fields of action, and by their example many have learned to look heavenward. None other, however, has given to the world such a sublime and wonderful example of inspired life as that of the one who is the subject of my present writing. Tall, stately, and majestic, his glorious figure emitting a halo of light, he moves among the people of the higher life, speaking a helpful word to one, blessing another, and proving in more ways than can be mentioned that he is a master of mighty power in the great world of the spirit. How often have I looked upon him, floating upward through the celestial ether toward higher realms of being, his majestic figure aglow with brilliant light. I have watched him after he has attained a height of many thousands of miles, and he was as plainly visible as he had been when moving among their people in the celestial world. An artist of the celestial world has depicted this divine one far up in the celestial atmosphere, descending toward the people with arms outstretched, as in the attitude of blessing. This masterly conception of the divine in art is entitled The King of Heaven. I make mention of this character because he seems to belong so essentially to all people of their mortal and immortal worlds. His father, who, at the time of my passing, was the supreme divine ruler of the spheres, was a being of such magnitude and power that but few could comprehend him. They could hear him speak and now and then could see him, but only those who were very enlightened could put themselves in sufficient touch with him to overcome the feeling of awe that his personal presence brought forth. Experience has taught me that in higher life we must grow toward higher things before we can grasp their meaning or learn to assimilate their lessons they teach. we may be brought before some wonderful character or divine manifestation, and be unable to see it and yet have the inner consciousness that it exists before us. The lesson such experiences impart is this: we must unfold the higher consciousness to the degree that puts us in unity with the particular being or manifestation of higher power of which we would have knowledge. One peculiarity of the spiritual vision and understanding is that it is capable of so many degrees of development and unfoldment. It would seem to the material conception that all persons of their higher life, from the spiritual to the celestial worlds, must possess the trait of vision that enables them to see alike whatsoever is or ought before them. I have dollar been in the presence of beings of mighty power that mine eyes could not behold, but there were others in my company who have been able to see and describe the appearance of those mighty ones, whom I have afterwards beheld with their power of a higher unfoldment of consciousness. This is one of the mysteries of the spiritual consciousness that is so difficult for the human mind to fathom. I have been far up in God's kingdom and there, kingdom of the blessed. I have looked upon marvelous manifestations and magnificent beings, while at the same time I was blind to other beings and demonstrations that were going on all about me. Later on my vision was unfolded sufficiently to behold them. Truly, it is a grand thought to contemplate and reflect upon the unfoldment of the higher consciousness of the immortal mind. It is a subject that can never be exhausted, for there is always more to it than can be grasped at any one time, no matter to what mighty degree their consciousness has found attainment. Chapter 11. In the Spiritual and Celestial Worlds. What constitutes true religion in spiritual life is a question that comes up continually in the minds of a thinking people who are broad enough in their ideas to realize that not any one religion held by the people of Earth can be sufficient to hold the multitude of spiritual beings who are passing to higher life day by day. This question of religious belief was another subject of absorbing interest to me, and so I made it a point to interview people of all spheres, from the lower to the higher. I found some of the most devoutly religious people I have ever known inhabitants of the lower spheres. I found that what their world terms religion was not always goodness or purity, that it was sometimes a cloak for traits of character not at all desirable. I found that many who believed themselves to be God's chosen people, because they had been religious, were spiritual paupers in the life beyond the grave. They were spiritual paupers for two reasons. In their first place, they had lived a life of mere form, and had not cultivated the broader spirit of progress, which must always have a higher motive than that of negative goodness, a motive which builds for character and for helpfulness to humanity. In their second place, they were bigoted and refused to accept the true religion as it was imparted to them by refined and educated spiritual teachers. Some will say that it is perfectly natural that a devout, religious person, imbued with his own ideas as to what constitutes true faith, should refuse to accept ideas that are new to him in relation to religious belief. When I state, however, that their spiritual beings sent to teach the truth to these religious bigots were persons of superior power and inspiring personality, it would seem that those who were to receive the instruction ought to be amenable to such high influence. Some do accept the truth, but the majority hold to their own belief and refuse to be influenced by any other ideas. This is very bad for them, of course, and holds them back from the path of progress until such a time when they decide to learn the way of their truth and the light from those sent to instruct them. I found Catholics, Methodists, Baptists, Presbyterians, Episcopalians, and those holding to other forms of belief in the first to the fourth spheres. After the fourth sphere there was but one religious belief held by all beings of the higher life. They had attained the stage of development that gave them knowledge of the truth, and it was not necessary that it be imparted to them by teachers appointed for that especial purpose. They had their knowledge of eternal progression and the mighty truth that every being called to the other life must work out his own salvation. By this time they had learned that church form, as it is carried out in the churches of earth, counts for nothing as far as the salvation of the soul is concerned. Religious belief in the higher life is founded upon knowledge and does not require faith, although faith does figure in relation to the great truths carried out in God's kingdom and realms beyond. Chapter 12. In the spiritual and celestial worlds. The family life was beautiful in the heavenly world. Some of the most pleasant hours of my life have been spent in the loving companionship of friends and loved ones of that life. Had I not been ambitious to perform much good work for the cause of humanity, it would have been almost a temptation to spend the larger part of my time in my own beautiful home and in enjoying the affairs of interest that were taking place continually in different parts of the heavenly kingdom. It seemed that the knowledge I gained in relation to higher things was to be modified and applied to those of my earthly friends who were prepared to receive it. Gradually, as I unfolded and progressed in higher knowledge and understanding, I was brought into a deeper line of study and work. I prepared myself for each step ahead of me in such a way that the knowledge I gained was well grounded in my understanding, and I was capable of imparting it to those ready to receive it. My life was divided into three parts: the gaining of spiritual and heavenly knowledge during their hours spent away from the earth, the hours of pleasure spent with those I cared for during what is termed the astral travel, and the hours I spent writing my views and experiences through a scribe selected for such work. It was a pleasant thought to me to realize that I could make my spiritual experience practicable in a material way. The other dear ones, with whom I was associated in a spiritual way, were as interested as myself to tell of the wonderful life and revelations of the great beyond. In a sense, I learned to live in two worlds at the same time. The plan of life, as I beheld it from my new viewpoint, seemed marvelous indeed. Their knowledge of eternal progression, the great ocean of space, where worlds existed beyond worlds, and worlds surmounted worlds, until it was impossible to find a beginning or an ending, interested me greatly. I wondered if I would ever progress sufficiently or perform enough good work to enter realms of power existing beyond the celestial world. From those higher realms, it seemed, emanated creative power that gave life and action to the spheres below. What went on in those higher realms was a sealed book to those in the realms below, unless it was especially ordained that certain information would be given. Those who really desired to progress to a point of understanding where they would be able to enter the higher kingdom and gain a knowledge of a higher expression of creative power were given their opportunity to prepare themselves, but they must be passed upon by the powers up to the 350th degree. One desiring such attainment must make no mention of it, but their desire in the mind would be known by the God of the 350th degree. He would consult with the God of the 349th degree, and each ruling God of the degree below must manifest his approval until it was known and desired by the mighty ones of the higher regions that a certain one was qualified to pass up into those sublime realms where God power was so intense in its manifestation. I must confess that I was surprised when it was revealed to me that I had been selected as one to enter God's kingdom and be brought into communion with the higher powers there. Through a newly awakened power in my own soul, I was asked to set apart a certain time every 48 hours, during which I would be brought into spiritual contact with some of the mighty powers far away in infinite space. In order to do this, I must enter the sacred shrine of my celestial home and there bring myself en rapport with those who were to sanctify and prepare me to enter a region where only the grand, the elevated in thought and their pure and unselfish in action were permitted to enter. I must learn some powerful lessons before I would be qualified, and even then I would be obliged to pass through some great ordeals after I had passed up into the higher realms, of which I had no conception. I was told to reflect well upon the great step I proposed to take. Some had taken the step, but had not acted exactly as they had been instructed after returning to the celestial world, and they had been recalled to the higher regions, to remain there for all time. Never again would they be permitted to mingle with their former friends and loved ones of the celestial world. It would have been a mighty trial to have had anything like that happen to me, so I was quite determined to accept the honor and at the same time carry out without faltering the obligations and responsibilities I was supposed to assume. The hours of preparation I spent in my own sacred shrine, with the light of great God powers illumining and flooding my spirit and quickening it for a larger work, filled me with a new realization that I had not known before. A new sense was unfolding within me, which perhaps would not have been quickened under any other condition. These were my most sacred moments, and for the time being, I was so uplifted in my realizations that I seemed to enter into a new sphere of being. How vain and unsatisfying seemed the life and conditions of the material world in comparison, and yet I could go from this sublime state of exaltation to my friends of Earth and participate in their interests and pleasures with a great deal of enthusiasm. When mingling in the life of the spirit, life was all harmonious and beautiful, but when coming with my friends of Earth, I could experience many of the feelings and emotions that I had while an inmate of the physical body. In this way I was enabled to enjoy all conditions that came into my life, and I was happy, very happy indeed, but at times I experienced feelings of indignation at the actions or different people of Earth, whose movements hindered the carrying out of plans that would have been helpful to a good cause. After I had undergone for a period the special preparation, the time came for me to pass up into God's kingdom. I was not permitted to know beforehand what awaited me there. With great anticipation, however, I awaited the summons that would take me up into those mighty realms. Part 2. Chapter 1. In God's Kingdom. One day, in company with the beloved Jose, I was summoned to God's kingdom. My mind, of course, was filled with the anticipations of what awaited me. The spiritual mind knows not fear, and so I feared not, although I had reason to believe that I would be obliged to pass through an experience similar to the one we call death before I could enter those higher realms of being. I trusted and placed my spirit in care of the Divine Son of God. One could not fear with such a being for a guide. In passing through the first degree of spiritual regeneration, the atoms of my spiritual body were disintegrated and only the God center of my being was apparent, but in a few seconds I stood forth again in a new body of a much higher grade than my spiritual form. I was dazed for a few moments, but realization soon came to me, and then I understood that for each higher degree of being we must pass through an experience which serves to clothe the God principle of the being with a new, regenerated body. I had been a celestial being before, but now I was a super celestial, and I had passed through the spiritual death. My vision previous to this time had enabled me to behold myself in all my parts, but with my new form of vision L could see that I possessed parts that had not been revealed to me before. Of course I had possessed these parts before, but they had not unfolded. I compared myself before to a partly opened flower. Now I was the unfolded blossom, and, no doubt, as I continued, there would still be a higher unfoldment for me, of which I was not conscious at this stage of my unfoldment. And so we traveled on through higher space, there, beloved Jose and I, and the atmosphere through which we passed was filled with vibrations of power. There was no vacuum in that atmosphere, which was in a continual state of vibration. The sensations of power that were sent down from the higher realms toward the celestial regions were modified somewhat before they reached their celestial sphere, I could experience them in their fullness of their power, as my new attainment of understanding and my regenerated body were capable of receiving such emanations of power. As a celestial being, I would not have been capable of entering these regions. Spheres of active life power, hundreds of times larger than the spheres of the Earth, were formed about each other. We moved rapidly, and the vibrations of the atmosphere produced a force that was equal to millions of degrees per second.